The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show Hour 1 Podcast.
Hey, very pleasant. Good afternoon and a very special happy Thanksgiving to all of you. We'll be with you today and, of course, we'll let you be with your family tomorrow and back on Friday. And we begin with the strangest of all Iron Bowl weeks. It used to be the most vicious rivalry in the country. And today we learn that the most famous coach in the country will not be on the sidelines. Yes, you heard me correctly. Here we go again, but this time it's for real. Nick Saban has tested positive and is showing mild COVID symptoms. Saban earlier today.
Well, I informed the team this morning at 10 on a Zoom call, and I'm the only person in the whole organization who tested positive on this, you know, round. So I'm still going to do everything possible relative to our team for Saturday's game with Auburn. You know, Sark will kind of oversee, you know, things in the building.
So that was Nick Saban earlier today on the SEC call, and it seems like we've done this once already this year, breaking news on Nick Saban and saying hello to John Talty of AL.com, and we do this again. John, I'm not laughing. I'm just shaking my head at the turns of this college football season. Good afternoon, and give us a story from Alabama.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on again, Paul. You know, we have had this conversation once before. We talked about the impact of it, and it ultimately proved to be a false positive. That's not the case this time around. We have a little bit more information. Just the way that Alabama has reacted to this situation, the initial release that they put out saying they're not treating it as a false positive. Nick Saban talking about the fact that Steve Sarkisian will be, you know, the guy running the show for the Iron Bowl. So, you know, I think, you know, you and I texted a little bit earlier today. You know, it looked like we were headed into, you know, kind of a lackluster Iron Bowl. You know, it's been a weird year in general, but, you know, there wasn't a ton of hype around this game. And here, you know, just a few days before the game, the day before Thanksgiving, the most famous coach in America tests positive, and it's for real this time. And so just really kind of a huge story coming out of nowhere in some regard, and having a potential big impact on this weekend's premier game, which, you know, I know your employer will be there for College Game Day. There's obviously, you know, a lot of attention around that rivalry.
Yeah, and John, I'm curious about when do we think the isolation ends? And I say that because I know on the schedule it says Arkansas, but you were here the other day telling us you think it could be LSU. They're both important games, but LSU in Baton Rouge a little more high profile.
Yeah, I mean, so that's there's some big questions that still need to be answered. One, you know, when will Nick Saban be able to return? You know, we know based on the SEC rules, based on symptoms, it's 10 days, which would put him in line to potentially be back for next Saturday. You know, we don't know for sure when the symptoms started, which also plays an impact. And then, you know, the other big piece of that is, yeah, what game are they playing? We already saw this past Monday a shaking up of some of the different games because of positive cases. There's still the possibility for that to happen. You know, we know that Alabama and LSU is an important game, and I think they'd love to get that game in if possible. Just the challenge is that with every game that gets canceled, it makes it a little more difficult to make all that work. So, yeah, I would certainly keep an eye out for next Monday based on what, you know, some other different things, whether we see changes for that following weekend, which could, of course, include Alabama, Arkansas getting shifted.
And, John, I don't know whether 5-6 weeks later we're so desensitized, exhausted, just have seen this story so many times before. You're in Alabama, I'm not. But when I heard this today, I was terribly sorry to hear it, but it just didn't seem to be like the end of the world as it did 5 weeks ago when we heard the first signs that Nick Saban had tested positive before the Georgia game.
Well, do you know what, something that's funny, Paul, is that, you know, what did feel like the end of the world to us is that after this news broke, our publishing system wasn't working. And so we weren't able to get up any stories, you know, lots of different organizations being plagued by that today. I think there was an Amazon outage. So we were freaking out more based on, like, how do we not get a story about this up more so than just, you know, him testing positive. Like you said, you know, of course you hope that he's okay, but I think, you know, if we've seen, you know, multiple other coaches test positive, you know, in that time frame from when he initially tested positive, Dan Mullen, Sam Pittman, we've seen big time basketball coaches, you know, Tom Izzo is obviously a longtime friend of Nick Saban. He's tested positive. So I think we have seen a little bit more around it. We've seen guys, you know, be able to coach afterwards. And so it doesn't have quite the level of kind of, you know, ring the alarm the way that it did when, you know, he tested positive for the Georgia game, but still certainly a big deal. And, you know, I think just, if this was any other year, people would be freaking out about the fact that Nick Saban can't coach in the Iron Bowl. But just because of, you know, the weird year we've had, I think everybody's just, you know, trying to roll off the punches at this point.
John Tossi with us from AL.com. And John, you know, nobody's been more aggressive and diligent and accurate than you have been all summer long on the return to play in this COVID year. So I'm curious, as we face these next couple of weeks, we see what's happening on a daily basis with Saban today. Just your expectations on the next couple of weeks, for especially based on your sources and the many administrators and people within the bubble that you speak to on a regular basis.
Yeah, Paul, it's going to be a challenge. You know, I think I've said that in the past on your show, and I think, you know, as time goes on, it gets, you know, more and more challenging. You know, I think if you go beyond even just the fact that we're seeing spikes across America right now, and that's, you know, part why people said, you know, don't have big Thanksgivings and all those kind of different things. You know, we're still seeing challenges that come with, you know, keeping guys, you know, kind of in a small bubble. You know, there's some concern about, you know, guys going home for Thanksgiving and what that might open up. And I think one of the ongoing major challenges is that you're seeing different, you know, programs. Mississippi State is one of them, Missouri, Vanderbilt, programs that already have had opt-outs or transfers or injuries have very limited numbers to begin with. And, you know, it's going to be a challenge for them to hit that 53-player threshold pretty much every week. And so that, you know, creates the possibility for further games getting canceled and more challenges that come with that. So, you know, I think every single week, you know, again, every Monday, you know, I'd pay attention to see if the games are getting moved or canceled. I think every week, you know, you're going to have to wait basically until the games get played to know for sure that the coaches are going to be there and that, you know, the key players are going to be there. And so I think that we, you know, I think it's more likely than not we will have additional disruptions from here. And certainly, you know, lots of kind of, you know, holding on as hard as possible and just hoping they get through that finish line on December 19th.
John, within the SEC, I know you keep up with this. We all try to, but you know, we've seen the one game rearranged this week. Do you think we're in reasonably good shape to get this week in?
I mean, I think it's certainly, you know, trending in a positive direction. You know, I think there's still going to be questions about Mississippi State. You know, we saw last week, you know, which they were actually under that 53-player threshold and decided to play anyway. You know, I don't think those issues are completely disappeared. I think there could be, you know, some kind of close numbers ahead of the Egg Bowl, which is obviously a huge game for them. But I think it's, you know, it goes back to what, you know, Commissioner Sankey has said, I think, numerous times on your show in the past. You know, it's really up until that last moment when those last tests come in that you can feel confident about the games are being played. You know, I certainly expect the Iron Bowl to happen, but there's always going to be those questions until that last moment. And so I think, you know, we're halfway through the week at this point. You know, I think you have a reasonably idea, you know, already one gone. We kind of know where some other teams are at, but there's still that possibility for those teams that aren't that much higher than the threshold to begin with, that all it takes is a couple guys getting injured or really one player testing positive, and that's going to knock out more players to contact tracing. So I think there's certainly, you know, reason to believe that, you know, we have to kind of pay close attention to this, you know, down the stretch.
I realize we're talking football here, but as many people know, maybe not everyone, this is the first day of the college basketball season. The game will come on hours from now following us. And John, I shouldn't be, but I'm in shock at watching the college basketball season try to get started. What do you hear on that? And what are the odds of them finishing?
I mean, it's a massive question right now. You know, I think the odds of them finishing, I almost feel a little bit better about, just because we all know after they lost the NCAA tournament last year, the absolute number one priority is to get that in. You know, a lot of teams need that money. Certainly the NCAA needs that money. That's their big event. So they're going to do everything they're possible to try to get NCAA tournament event in. But I think we're going to see a lot of games get canceled. It's, you know, I think increasingly more difficult, significantly more difficult, I should say, than football is, just because of all the issues that go with it. You know, you're seeing some different conferences try different things. Conference USA is having, you know, teams play each other back to back over weekends, that hope that that will mitigate things a bit. That's kind of weird. You know, I think you're going to see a lot of just weird things happen during the college basketball season. And so, you know, people that I talk to, even people around the SEC, you know, they feel like they've done a pretty good job around football, but, you know, even they'll tell you, like, I don't know how this is going to work with basketball. And so I think there's some real questions about how that's going to work out. I think, you know, it's kind of even, you know, similar to football, but even a lesser threshold, I think, for success. It's just, you just try to get as many games as possible in, but with the understanding that you're probably going to lose quite a few.
And before you go, Steve Sarkisian will take over Saturday. And I bring that up because his name has been linked to the South Carolina job, but not certainly on the front row. I'm assuming Alabama wins Saturday, but if Alabama wins Saturday and Sarkisian acquits himself, do you think that is going to factor in, not so much, maybe not for that job, but there'll be other jobs opening? And, you know, it would seemingly make him a more attractive prospect, would it not?
Yeah, it doesn't seem like he's really in the mix for South Carolina. I think that might, you know, I can't speak too much. I haven't really heard of him any from people I've talked to on the South Carolina side. And I think that might just be a consideration of the fact that Sarkisian probably wouldn't want that job. But I do think he's going to be, you know, named for, you know, in the mix for jobs going forward. I think, you know, there are two kind of main things that you're going to wonder about Sarkisian is, A, you know, just his coaching abilities and what he's able to do with that. You know, it's certainly a big test for him coming up this weekend against the Iron Bowl. You know, they do what people expect them to do. I think that certainly doesn't hurt him. And then just there's going to be ongoing questions about just, you know, his personal life and his off the field behavior. You know, he obviously flamed out in pretty spectacular fashion at USC and has well-documented issues with alcohol abuse. You know, we've seen different stories about how he has changed and has moved, you know, beyond those things. But I think anybody who is considering hiring him, you know, that's why you do have a search firm, or that's why you do have people kind of working behind the scenes to really vet, to make sure that all the stories that we've seen about how he's changed are actually true, and that he has kind of, you know, been able to move past those previous demons that he's had. And so that's going to be a key factor, I think, going forward. But certainly he's well-regarded. I think he's done a terrific job as Alabama's offensive coordinator. You know, and he's going to be in the mix for some big head coaching jobs, I think, in the future. Maybe not South Carolina, but, you know, some other, whether USC, not USC, but other Pac-12 jobs or, you know, other SEC jobs that open up in the future. I think you'll see his name kind of be mentioned along with other top candidates.
John Talty here, primarily talking about Nick Saban testing positive. But John, you didn't think you were going to come into our house and get away with that, not having to defend your column the other day about Jeremy Pruitt at Tennessee. Come on, you're talking to a Tennessee graduate here. Please explain the just punishing shots that you took at the hire of Jeremy Pruitt and his performance as head coach.
Was I that punishing, Paul? I thought that I was even-handed. But here's the thing,
that's why it hurt so much. In fact, you were fair. That made it that hurt even more.
I think there are two points to be made here. One is that, you know, I think, you know, people have made the point when Rutgers was playing well against Michigan, you know, kind of making fun of Tennessee for not hiring Greg Schiano. And I'll continue to make the point that I don't think Schiano was the right hire for Tennessee. I don't think he was the right fit. But certainly what we're seeing now are questions about whether Pruitt is the right fit. I think Pruitt's running into the challenge that, you know, previous Saban protégés have run into the past. Certainly Will Muschamp is one of them, that if you don't have the offense figured out, it doesn't matter how good of a defensive mind you are, because that's the way the game has changed. And so, you know, Pruitt's inability, I think, to get a modern offense going at Tennessee, I think the hiring of Jim Chaney was a mistake. And I think, you know, the unwillingness to move off of Jarrett Garantano, I think, is ultimately going to play potentially a role in his doom at Tennessee. You know, I think that it has not worked out to his favor. And I think worse off for him is just that there doesn't seem to be, at least to this point, a very capable backup that he can put in and feel confident and playing. So, you know, I'd heard from people around him that when he first got to Tennessee, there was some initial regret that, you know, it was a worse off situation than I think what he thought he was getting into. And I think maybe, you know, as time goes on, he'll regret maybe taking that job overall. But I think just to this point, getting toward the end of year three, it hasn't worked out. And you talk to people around college football, and there's just not a lot of confidence that he's going to be able to make the changes necessary to really get things back on track and reach a level of success that, you know, alums like yourself and maybe others expect for Tennessee.
And finally, and it was a very good column. I'm just kidding you, of course. What happens next for him? Because, you know, the Vanderbilt game is pushed to the end of the season. He may be taking a 7-game losing streak into that game. And somehow, should he lose that game, he would finish the season on an 8-game losing streak, assuming he loses to Florida and Texas A&M as well. I don't know how to sugarcoat his plight in the offseason. What would you say?
Yeah, I almost think that it might be a good thing that they're not playing Vanderbilt, you know, this weekend, just because the risk reward, I don't know if the reward of beating Vanderbilt, a game that everybody expects, is really worth the risk of potentially losing that game and having every Tennessee fan demanding Phil Fulmer fire him. So, you know, I think if you're Tennessee at this point, you might hope that you just don't have to play a couple of these games or they get rescheduled, so you don't have to do that. But certainly if they lose out, there will be tremendous pressure, I think, on Fulmer to make a move. And he's got, you know, a $12.5 million buyout, so it'd be hefty to move on from Pruitt, especially after only 3 years. But, you know, losing out would be really bad. I also think one of the key factors at this point is just, you know, they have games, big games remaining, and how you kind of acquit yourself in those games, I think, will be important. If you get absolutely blown out by those two remaining opponents, you know, Florida and Texas A&M, you know, I think that's going to have some of the important boosters, you know, get a little itchy about making a move there. So, you know, I think if you talk to people around the conference, I think there's still the expectation that he'll get another year and come back for year four at Tennessee. But, you know, if they lose out, it's going to put a lot of pressure on Tennessee people to have to make a move there, just because there won't be any momentum whatsoever heading into a possible year four.
John Talty, a fantastic conversation, primarily about Nick Saban, but we threw in a couple of dressings and giblet and cranberry sauce and pumpkin pie just for the Thanksgiving feast. John, have a great holiday. We will talk to you very soon, I'm sure.
You too. Great talking to you, Paul.
John Talty, the senior sports editor of AL.com. The breaking news earlier today that Nick Saban has tested positive for COVID. This time, it's for real. More of your phone calls beginning in a moment at 855-242-7285.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's HIMS.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. HIMS.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
And we welcome you back here, getting started a little bit later than usual because of the breaking news, later than usual in terms of telling you what else is going on. By now, you probably know Bama, Notre Dame, Clemson, Ohio State are the top four in the initial CFP rankings that came out last night. So there you have it. A&M is 5, Florida 6, so 3 of the top 6 from the SEC. And, of course, Georgia is at number 9. Meanwhile, Scott Satterfield, he said he's committed to Louisville after his name is linked to South Carolina. I have to tell you, Scott, I have never heard your name linked to South Carolina, but nice try in letting your people know you're a wanted man. And what about Vanderbilt? They are working with a soccer player, a female soccer player, Sarah Fuller, and she may end up kicking for the Commodores, Derek Mason.
Just wanted to, how Sarah would actually work as an option. I had her out, have had a chance to look at, what she can do, with the football. She's really good with the soccer ball. She seems to be pretty good with the football. So we'll see. She's an option. And we're keeping all options open right now, and we'll get a chance to see what she does on Saturday if given the opportunity. Sarah's an option. She seems to be a pretty good option, so we'll figure out what that looks like on Saturday.
Of course, the Commodores won the women's soccer tournament last week. Josh Vitale from the Montgomery Advertiser covers Auburn. Simon Gibbs, who had that big story in the Hustler. Griff is back to ruin your Thanksgiving. Greg McElroy later on, and Mike Oresko, the commissioner of the AAC, which lost Cincinnati today for a big game that they needed. By the way, with the rankings out, a lot of odds makers have tried to determine, first of all, how would Alabama fare against some of the top teams in the CFP? Alabama would open as a 4-point favorite against Ohio State, 6.5-point favorite against Clemson, and a 10-point favorite against Notre Dame. In other words, Alabama is the favorite to win the national championship, in case you weren't following that very closely. Let's get to some calls here before our next guest. And Mitch starts us off from South Carolina. Hey, Mitch.
How are you today, Mr. Feinbaum?
Mitch, I am doing great. I hope you are.
I am, and I'm calling with a full, happy heart, and I just want to express my thanks to you, your staff, the callers, for allowing me to be a part of the Powell Feinbaum family. You really don't know how simple my life is. I don't really do much, but for the past 6 or 7 months, I have enjoyed coming home and listening to your show, being a part of it, and it really truly has given me a sense of belonging to something. And I just wanted to say that's one of the things that I'll be thankful tomorrow. I have a lot of things. I don't get me wrong. I don't have a life that is depressed and all that. But I really have never had a family. I really have never had a belonging to anything but employment, school, or whatever. But I really have felt like I've gotten to know people just from listening to them. And this morning I realized I have a coworker. I'm not going to name her name, but she and I have become closer because she and her boyfriend listen to your show, and then we talk about it. She's a closer fan, too, but they listen to your show, too. And she and I have gotten closer by talking about your show in the morning. And I don't know that the grasp of this will ever hit you until you retire or whatever, but I'm going to mourn your show when it's gone.
Well, Mitch,
I guess that's all I really want to say. Happy Thanksgiving.
That is such a nice thing to say.
My year a better year than a lot of people seem to think theirs have been.
Well, Mitch, first of all, thank you for saying all that. It means a lot. I think not only to us who work on the program, but to everyone who's part of this family. And I know that's an overused phrase, but I think it's real. I feel like...
No, I feel it. I can't speak for everybody else, but I feel like I've been included in something.
Well, I think...
And it just... like I said, there's going to come a time when you step away from the mic, and when you do, there's going to be a lot of sadness. But we'll all be thrilled that you're actually getting to sit down and rest and enjoy your life. But I really do. Your show means a tremendous, tremendous amount to me.
Well, Mitch, you have made our Thanksgiving here on the program, and you have a great one, and we look forward to seeing you when the holiday ends. You be well, my friend.
You be blessed, and tell your wife be blessed, too.
I will. Thank you so much. South Carolina joining us, a busy first 30 minutes with the news of Nick Saban, and we will continue. The games will go on, even though the head coach of Alabama will not be on the sidelines Saturday. Your phone calls continue, plus more guests.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Josh Vitale covers the Auburn Tigers for the Montgomery Advertiser. Is here. Josh, first of all, thank you for joining us. It's always good to have you on.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Paul. I appreciate it.
So we have the Iron Bowl. We all know how important that is in college football, especially in Alabama, and now we find out the biggest name in the Iron Bowl won't be on the sidelines. What's been the reaction where you are and with the team that you cover?
It's interesting. I guess you can't really predict anything in 2020, but to go into this Iron Bowl with Gus Malzahn on one sideline and Nick Saban on the other, I don't think anyone would have ever predicted that to happen in this rivalry. We talked to Gus in the SEC teleconference. He said that it's going to be weird for him to not coach against Nick Saban in the Iron Bowl, because that's every Iron Bowl he's ever been in has had Nick Saban on the other sideline. So it's going to be different, a little weird to not have that across from Auburn.
Certainly, that is the biggest story of this game. It's also a revenge game. We all know what happened last year at the end of that game at Jordan-Hare Stadium. Auburn with a win here could really head toward the closing weeks of this season on an amazing run. They really have played pretty well, all things considered, considering their bumpy beginning, the Georgia second half, and the still inexplicable loss to South Carolina. How would you evaluate where we are with Auburn right now?
Yeah, like you said, they're playing their best football of the season. That South Carolina loss was bad, and it's worse in hindsight, but I think that was the loss that kind of whipped Auburn into shape. That was the end that Auburn figured out that, Auburn is not a pass-first team. It's not a team that can dial up 50 throws for Bo Nix a game. It's a team that is better when it runs the ball and, passes off of that. And we've seen that against Ole Miss, against LSU, against Tennessee, where Auburn has run the ball really effectively. And Bo Nix has played really efficiently on top of that. But having said all that, Ole Miss can't play defense, really. LSU has had so many troubles this year, and Tennessee has obviously not been good. Seeing Auburn continue to do that against Alabama, that's an entirely different challenge that this team has not faced, since that Georgia game week two, and Alabama, as we've seen, is much better than that Georgia team.
Yeah, it seems like this ought to be a pretty reasonably good game, but I know Auburn has some injuries. Tell us what's going on down there and the impact it could have.
Yeah, that's probably the thing that Auburn feels worst about going into this game is running back Tank Bigsby, who's been so good for them this year. He is questionable after suffering a hip injury against Tennessee. He tried to come back in the second quarter and just couldn't go. And then both starting offensive tackles, Alec Jackson on the left and Brodarius Ham on the right side, are also questionable after suffering injuries against Tennessee. So, as I was just saying, Auburn wants to build its offense off being able to run the ball effectively, and it could go into this game without its top running back and two tackles at 100%. Now, officially, they're all questionable to play, but they did not practice Tuesday. Gus Malzahn keeps saying he's hopeful that they'll play, and it's definitely possible they'll dress and suit up. But, looking at it, if they don't practice Tuesday and they're questionable Wednesday, it seems unlikely that they'll be 100% by game time. So if they do play, it's probably not going to be at full capacity. So you got to imagine that's going to affect Auburn's offense a little bit, just not having three key guys healthy.
Josh, aside from the Saban news, which we just learned of today, I'm really curious about the Iron Bowl. And, it's a famous game, maybe the best game maybe the best rivalry in college football, but it's in a weird place this year. The season's not over like it normally is, or the regular season, and everything else is weird about this year. But tell the audience around the country, maybe it's my imagination, but how different this Iron Bowl week seems.
It does feel different. Like you said, this is the last game of the year. A lot of times it's when Auburn's good, it's been an SEC West championship game where kind of the winner, it's winner take all. Not every year, but, you know, oftentimes. And this year, it's still a big game. It still means a lot to everyone in the state, of course. But, you know, each team has two games left after. You don't even, not even totally 100% sure what the schedule will be like after. The SEC championship game, I guess, is 3 weeks away from it. The college football playoff rankings just came out a couple days ago. There's not going to be 100,000 people in Bryant-Denny Stadium. There's going to be, I guess, 20,000 to 30,000, whatever their number is. It does feel very different. Add Nick Saban not being there into that, and it's totally crazy. But, yeah, I'm looking forward to being at the stadium because I'm curious to see what this rivalry will feel like without, you know, a full stadium. Because that, to me, coming from someone, you know, who has not been part of the rivalry growing up, I'm not from Alabama, I'm from Connecticut. So seeing it for the first time, the coolest thing to me was just the atmosphere in the stadium and how into it, obviously, all the fans are. To not have that be in full effect on Saturday, I think will feel maybe more different than any game has felt this season just because of what the rivalry means to so many people.
Well, Josh, if you want to see how loud that stadium can be, go back and YouTube the game 10 years ago this week when Alabama had a 24-point lead at halftime against Auburn, and then Cam Newton led them back. And you can compare the noise in the first half versus the stone silence in the second half.
Yeah, I talked to a few fans this week about that game, and they said that that first half was when Alabama went up, I think, 21 or 24 nothing, whichever moment that was maybe the most deafening crowd noise they've ever heard. But then they said second half, once Auburn cut it to one score, they could hear a pin drop. So it's I've heard nothing but legend about that game. I remember watching that one when I was in college.
Yeah, we got the quarterback from Alabama on that side in a couple of hours. We'll ask him what it was like because I guarantee you he remembers it. Hey, Josh, thank you very much for coming on. All the best, and we hope to talk to you again very soon.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on, Paul.
You bet. Josh Vitale, nice enough to join us again. We've talked to Josh many times when we make the rounds down on the plains. We will take a break. More to come. More on Nick Saban missing Saturday's game because of COVID. More games have been canceled. It is Wednesday before Thanksgiving.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
And back to the phones we go here on a Wednesday. Pierce is in Virginia. Hello, Pierce.
How you doing, Mr. Paul?
We are doing great. Thank you.
Hey, yes, I was calling because I am a Tennessee fan through and through, and I am struggling to watch this team play from week to week. And I heard your excuse me. Interview earlier with Mr. John and talking about Jeremy Pruitt and where they're going and all that, and I couldn't agree more with what I've seen. I've been following Tennessee since the 70s, and what I'm seeing right now, they're struggling, Paul. It's hard to watch.
Well, no, it is, and I think the question now becomes, you know, what is the solution? How do you rectify it? I mean, and, you know, the common solution for every young coach in trouble is fire the same people that he hired. I've never been a big fan of that. To me, the head coach is responsible. And you have to ask some pretty serious questions. Is Jeremy Pruitt the right coach at Tennessee? It's a fair question.
That's very true. My thing is, I think Chaney may – if he can't come up with a solution next year, obviously they're not going to beat Florida. They're not going to beat Texas A&M. I'm a realist. I know that's not going to happen.
No.
Whether they can make the game competitive or not, that remains to be seen. I mean, the Vanderbilt game was really the only game that they have that they can win. I don't think it's hard to say if they will, because I've seen in the past where they should have beaten Vanderbilt and they've lost several times to them recently. I think Daniel, in all honesty, he looks okay. They've tried to play him at the end of the game. I don't think they have anything to lose to just start him and see what they got going forward, because he won't make it past next year if they keep going at the rate they're going at right now. It's from what I can see.
No, you're right. Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Mac is up next. Hey, Mac. Mac, you there? Mac once, twice gone. Jim is in West Virginia. Hey, Jim.
Hello.
Hey there. Good afternoon.
Yeah, I'm actually in Virginia, not West Virginia.
Sorry about that.
I'm a surgeon. I called you on Labor Day and
right.
We talked about COVID.
I remember that.
Yeah, and I'm just a little bit concerned about how they do contact tracing. I don't know if that's controlled by the Alabama Department of Medicine or the individual schools or the SEC, but, you know, who on the team and which assistant coach hasn't had intimate contact with Nick Saban over the last two or three days? And if he's out on the field, you know, barking orders or requests through a mask, I just don't know how protected the players are. So just a concern I have as a physician.
It's interesting, Jim, because
just wondering if you knew how they did that.
Yeah, there is a protocol.
Standpoint.
There is a specific protocol. It's an SEC protocol, which I think somewhat mirrors the NCAA guideline. And I think it's a pretty standard protocol. I'm trying to remember exactly how it's worded, but that is a very interesting analysis by you, and obviously a very learned analysis.
You just have to trust in honesty, because, you know, what assistant coach is going to say, you know, I was too close to him and I'm going to walk away?
No, you're right. It's a very good question. It seems like, and I'm trying to remember, you help me with this because you're a doctor, I'm not, but, you know, when you test positive, that means that you could have had the virus for up to, what, 4 or 5 days?
Yeah, at least 2 or 3 days.
Okay.
You're probably contagious before you have symptoms. So that's what I'm saying. If you have let your guard down at any point, take your mask down, or in close contact with someone, you could see that, you know, balloon into more people. But you're probably not going to know that till Friday or Saturday right before the game. And I know Florida State didn't want to play Clemson because they were concerned that there were Clemson players or coaches that had been in contact with a positive person.
Yeah, Jim, I know that they test again, I believe, on Friday. So that could be interesting to watch. Hey, I appreciate the call. Always great to have you on the program. We are heading to a break. Let me remind people, I know this is a crazy day. People are in the car, driving to the airport, driving to see relatives, friends. Nick Saban has tested positive for COVID. That's the headline of this day. He will miss Saturday's Iron Bowl. Simon Gibbs from the Vanderbilt Hustler is next. He had a big story about the possibility of a female kicker at Vanderbilt coming up next.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network beginning at 3 Eastern.